Hey, Tara Strong here, and you're listening to the Geekcast Radio Network.
Hello, and welcome to episode 228 of the Cinema Geeks. I am one of your Cinema Geeks, Optimus Solo, and joining me, as he has been throughout this series, is the Comic Concierge. Hello, Dan.
Hey, you're that's a very like NPR level opening. I feel like that you got the NPR voice going on there.
Trying. For a moment. I've been fighting like a cold and like whatnot for the last, we'll call it 5 days. And I don't know what I was doing. I walked into the bathroom the other day and I said something and I was like, ooh, I could do like Barry White right now. I just got to record myself real quick. So we are back at it for this Cary Grant retrospective winding down. We only have this and one more film to go before we kind of conclude this little, feels like a small retrospective after the Hitchcock one, even though we have covered a number of films, but I feel like it's like half the size of the other one we did. So it feels like it's gone by somewhat quick. So today we're going to be covering the 1957 American romance film, An Affair to Remember. And before we get the facts from Dan, what is your experience with An Affair to Remember going into this?
I had no experience going into this. I'd never watched it before. Didn't know much about it. I knew of it. Like, it's, you know, it's a classic movie and you've seen, it's one of those movies, like when you see award shows and stuff like that, you'll see clips of it and things like that. But I didn't really know much about the plot. Didn't know much about the story. So kind of went in really just trying to know as least as I can. And that was my experience with it. How about yourself?
Yeah, the same. Like, I went in this one knowing that the title was a name of a movie and knowing that Cary Grant must be in it since we're covering it during this retrospective. And that was about it. I've never even heard anybody's take on it, opinions on it, anything. I didn't know if it was well-received, not well-received. So went in about as blind as you can possibly go into a movie. So since we're both somewhat uneducated on this film, why don't you fill us in with some facts and then we'll come back after we watch it with our opinions.
Well, you won't forget this one. An Affair to Remember was released in 1957, directed by Leo McCarey, starring Cary Grant, Deborah Kerr, Richard Denning, Nevie Peterson, and Kathleen Nesbitt. The story follows Nikki Ferninay, a charming, sophisticated playboy and painter, and Terry McKay, a beautiful nightclub singer. They meet aboard a transatlantic ocean liner traveling from Europe to New York. Both are engaged to other people, but over the course of the voyage, they fall deeply in love. To test the sincerity of their feelings and avoid scandal, they agree to meet again in 6 months on the top of the Empire State Building, provided they manage to end their current relationship and build independent lives. However, tragedy strikes on the day of their planned reunion. Terry is hit by a car and left paralyzed. Ashamed of her condition, she doesn't tell Nikki what happened, and he believes she simply lost interest. Months later, fate brings them together again in a powerful emotional finale that reveals the truth. An Affair to Remember is one of Hollywood's most beloved romantic films and has been noted as an influence by countless romantic dramas and comedies, including Sleepless in Seattle. Grant often said this was one of his favorite roles in films, partly because of how sincere and emotional he was. Deborah Kerr's singing voice was dubbed. Her songs were performed by Mamie Nixon, who is famous for dubbing the singing voices of other actresses, including Audrey Hepburn in My Fair Lady and Natalie Wood in West Side Story. The film received 4 Oscar nominations, including cinematography, costume design, original song, and original score, and is on AFI's Top 100 Greatest Love Stories of All Time, ranking number 5. Cary Grant was known for his perfection and subtle control over his performance. During the filming, he suggested small changes to dialogue and blocking to make the scenes feel more natural. The director trusted his instincts. Granted, he often rephrased his lines and matched his elegant conversational style, helping to create the film's smooth romantic tone. Was it all worth it? Does it deserve that reputation all these years later? And how does it fit into Cary Grant's overall career? Back to Kevin and myself to discuss.
All right, now that we got all of the facts laid out and we've had a chance to watch the film, Dan, it looks like from my brief research that An Affair to Remember goes one of two ways. In reading some of the critiques on this film, I've seen such words as ridiculously childish, absurd, too thick, unbelievably foolish, and also got a 67% on Rotten Tomatoes. And then on the flip side of that, I see that it got nominated for 4 Academy Awards, is listed on AFI's top 100 romances of all time, as well as a number of other substantial lists. I think the 1001 movies you need to see before you die has been redone and referenced in a number of different films like Sleepless in Seattle and things of that nature. So my question to you is, in which group do you reside? Do you reside in the not believable aspect and the 67% fresh, which I know is still fresh, but it feels like a low number compared to some of the other classic films we see? Or do you line up with this is one of the most romantic films of all time?
67%, I would thought be higher than that. I feel like I'd be interested to see like the percentage of those reviews that are negative, how many of them are within the last, you know, certain years, like of the time, mm-hmm. Compared to when it first came out. I do feel like watching this, and it was interesting because I was watching it, and my wife's like, "You're watching A Fair to Remember?" I'm like, "You know this movie?" He's like, "Yeah, it's like my mom's favorite movie." Like, I think that is the tagline to this. Wow. It's like, it's your mom's favorite movie. It's like, it is, and I don't think my mom ever watched it. I mean, this does feel like a movie, like it would, her generation. It is a very simplistic story. There's no denying that. It is, you know, very straightforward in its approach. But then it's interesting because we like skip so much time because, you know, obviously we watched some of the previous films during in the 50s during the Hitchcock retrospective, but it's like night and day when it looks at like how the female characters are portrayed in like, some of the 40s films like His Girl Friday and Bring Up Baby, where the back and forth between like characters like Captain Hepburn and Cary Grant, they both had, they're very antagonistic towards one another. They, you know, in that way, this didn't really have nearly as much of that. Everything was kind of sweet and pristine, which is not necessarily a bad thing. Like, this is a very earnest movie, and something about that is charming. I just found like that aspect of it. It is, like I mentioned, it's like your mom's favorite movie. It's a movie that is very pleasant to watch. It might be simplistic, but also I've really found myself being kind of memorized by like Cary Grant's performance in this, because it felt like, you know, mentioned like getting this huge time jump, like meeting up with a friend from high school after a long time, and maybe you liked them in high school, maybe they're okay, but they're a little bit like all right, man, like you gotta grow up a little bit, like you're, and this did feel like Cary Grant has like grown up in his performance. He's a bit more restrained. He feels like he is being more retrospective in the way he approaches things, in a way, the way he internalizes. He's much more dramatic within this. He has some of his quips here and there, but it is not a comedic performance, first and foremost. So I completely get where those individuals who would say it's kind of dumb and or whatever you want to, however you want to categorize it. But I guess I found that element of it, I found it quaint. And I guess in a world where were so filled with cynicism and things like that, it was a nice escape to get something like this. You know, we usually turn your brain off type of entertainment or something like Transformers, but I think you can kind of apply that to this in a way, in the sense of like it's where it's going, you know how it's ending, but I don't know. It had that, like, maybe just because it did remind me of like watching classic films with my parents, that I did enjoy that experience. But I get where those criticisms are coming from. About yourself?
I think I was reading some of the stuff after the fact. I try not to look at anything beforehand, go in blind, and then after I watch it, I try to at least get some knowledge of like what people were saying about it and things of that nature, which is obviously where some of those critiques come from. And then when I was also just doing a quick scan over, just the Wikipedia page, I see that the director has a comment here, and his quote is, "Hollywood films all seem to be trying to find a trick way of saying I love you. What are they trying to prove? Love is the oldest and noblest emotion." And I feel like that resonates with me somewhat, because it's exactly what you're saying. It's like they stripped away everything else. Like, yes, there's nothing too complicated or complex. It's pretty straightforward and simple. But in a way, like, that works for me, because it's just getting out of the way, let two performers perform in a way. And there's a lot of also from McCary that's about improvisational. So he encouraged his actors and actresses to do as much improv as they could, and, you know, captured what he could and used it for the film. So there's a lot of lines in here and a lot of moments that are improvised. But I think that adds to that same notion of like, just get out of the way and let these folks truly perform and tell this story, whether it's, I don't know, I guess some of them were saying it's not believable and this, that, and the other. I didn't necessarily find that as something I got tripped up on while I was watching it, but I found myself just generally enjoying my time with the movie, if that makes sense. Like, I can't exactly describe why, you know what I mean? It's not like it was like this super clever, I'm not saying the dialogue's bad, like some of it is clever, some of it's, you know, funny and endearing and things like that, but it's not like it's written by like some type of super clever genius that you're just like, oh, I just really like the quips back and forth. You're right, that it's not like super comedic, so there's not like, oh, I was just laughing the whole time. There's not these complicated twists and turns. So like you're left with, I was left with a feeling of, hey, I just really enjoyed my time with this film, but I'm not 100% sure why. So it's like, and I think maybe some of it boils down to the fact that we've seen a lot of different sides of Cary Grant. Like we've seen like the James Bond-esque Cary Grant in the Hitchcock films that we watched. We've seen the very comedic side of him in even a North by Northwest or His Girl Friday, bringing up baby, things of that nature. We've seen him do more of a dramatic effect role with Penny Serenade, and to a point, I guess, with the last film we covered as well. This one, to me, is a side we've seen in a lot of his other roles, but it's never been more the focus than it seems like it is in this one, where it's just literally the smooth side of Cary Grant. Like, I know we've seen that in other things, but it's like everything else is stripped away. We're not running away from helicopters. We're not trying to crack jokes. It's like, let me take all of that away and just show you how like convincing I am as somebody that could like win somebody else over, like, and just be romantic and all of that. Like, I feel like he's like, if you were to describe different traits of Cary Grant, he would have this for sure. You would describe him as kind of that Rico Suave guy. And like, if I was going to point to a movie that demonstrates that, I feel like this is it. So like, to me, that worked a lot to be able to see him, even though he's not as comedic. I still think he has like the lines that you're like, you're just kind of like, oh, you slick little guy. Like, or, you know, like, oh, yeah. You know, I see what you're doing here and she's going to fall for that or this, that, and the other. So like, I just really enjoyed my time with it. And I was shocked when I saw that it only had a 67. I was like, oh, this is going to be one of those that's like number, you know, 5 on everybody's list, and it's like a 98% on Rotten Tomatoes and all this other stuff. I'm like, oh, maybe I'm the only one that liked this movie a lot. So but no, I really enjoyed it, but I do agree that it is a different setup than what we've had. Like, we basically went with because all the Hitchcock stuff was in the middle, we kind of went from early Cary Grant to now I guess what we could call later Cary Grant. And it does seem like we've jumped in the way that, you know, the females are being depicted and some of that nature. So I get some of that as well. But I'm not shocked that this is, you know, listed on some of the most romantic movie lists of all time.
I mean, and that's the thing. They certainly, like, you talk about romance, like, when it comes to ultimately chemistry, and that's all you need, that. And that was certainly there. Like, they had that. And, you know, as simple as it might sound, I was, you know, rooting for them to get together and, like, and like seeing them kind of work through this. And I just find it interesting, like, where she has this accident, of course, and she is paralyzed, but they can't like directly say it. And I was trying to figure out if there was something like they like had, I couldn't show someone in a wheelchair. It was just interesting the way that was approached. But yeah, I think on the romance side, like, they worked all together. Like, they had that back and forth. Like it was different than some of the previous performances, but like I said, it did feel like a more adult relationship, where some of the other ones were more like, you know, antagonistic. Here, it felt, you know, they started there, but they kind of grew, and you could see why they would care for each other as much as they did. I mean, again, was it the most complex or, you know, expertly written? No, but I also did like how, like, so much of their interaction was depicted based upon like how well worried they'd be perceived by everyone, like, you know, because they had so many eyes on them because of who they were. Mm-hmm. And I think that even speaks to today in a lot of ways, because, you know, it's different, but if you're someone in the limelight, like, there's that high school mentality that exists now, but even, you know, back then, clearly it did as well, where people are just looking for drama to talk about and spread.
Yeah, it almost seems like it was ahead of its time, but obviously that probably, you know, existed to some extent, you know, throughout time as well. Seems like it's more elevated in our time. I'm curious on your take of this movie is basically, to me, divided into like two halves. I know movies have acts and whatnot, and, you know, typically it's three acts, but I feel like it's also, this movie is somewhat like one half and the second half. Like the first half is everything that happens on the boat with them kind of getting to know each other and trying to explore if they're going to actually, you know, do anything with their feelings for each other, et cetera. And then you have the second half, in my opinion, which is once they disembark and they kind of go their separate ways with this plan to meet back up on a certain day at a certain time. But what was it, at the top of the Eiffel Tower or somewhere?
No, the Empire State Building.
Empire State Building. Yeah, we're in the wrong country. you know, with this whole plan, and we got to see like how that's going to work out and whatnot. Did you have a preference? Did you prefer one, the first half over the second half, or did you kind of feel like they all flowed together well?
Everything, I enjoyed the first half more, because like that second half does, I say, you know, it's them being apart. You don't have that back and forth as much. You don't have,
right.
it's more so, it's purposely more depressing, because it's all about like, okay, they're not, you know, making you lead to believe, okay, this isn't happening. And it does, I wouldn't say drag a bit, but it is interesting too. This was a time and place where we're just going to insert musical, like full musical performances that I don't know if they really pertain to much beyond the fact that we need to have a song now, but yeah, I definitely enjoyed the boat sequence the most, because I think that's when we really got to see them, that relationship blossom. And then when it gets to off the boat and you're just waiting for the inevitable, it's, you know, not that I disliked it, but it wasn't as compelling.
Yeah, I feel like it's interesting, because you would think the opposite, right? Like you would think, to some people, like, hey, we're going to just spend the first half all on the boat, and it's literally just going to be these two people getting to know each other and exploring that relationship.
Yeah.
A lot of people would kind of be like, well, that sounds kind of boring. I'm with you. I prefer that. Like, I like to see the inner workings of a relationship like that. And then you would think, like, the rest of it, like, the setup here, they're both going to go their separate ways. They're both engaged or have significant others. They have to decide if they're going to break that off or not. They're supposed to meet together.
Yeah.
Will one of them, like, not meet up? Will one of them decide to stay with her? You know, whatever. We obviously have the wrench thrown in the mix that on her way she gets into this accident. So it's like she doesn't show up, but he doesn't know why, and that she was headed there. Like, so it seems like, hey, there's all this interesting stuff in the second half, but I'm with you. I actually prefer the boat section of this film and getting to see, like, and I get some of it, because obviously when you separate the two leads, they're not going to be able to play off of each other. So you have to like somewhat be able to take them each independently and who they're interacting with and things like that. I do think it is the typical, I'm not saying that in a bad way, but you do have like the romantic movie-esque thing where the accident happens to prevent her to, you know, the whole unknown thing where it's like the Romeo and Juliet thing, right? Like, you know, you don't know that she's not dead type deal or whatever the case may be. So I do, you know, I kind of like that, even though it does happen a lot in all the romantic movies, but you're like, ah, you could just scream through the screen and tell everybody what's going on, this could be solved much easier. And things of that nature. So but I did enjoy the section on the boat for sure. Outside of maybe the simplicity, did you have any other drawbacks that you had for the film in your experience?
Much of the musical performances, I didn't think they were bad, but it wasn't like these are songs I can't wait to listen to again. I mean, the voices were good. Like they obviously got like people to, dub in for Deborah Kerr's voice, but I don't know. This wasn't The Sound of Music or something like that, where it's like that was a strong suit. And the fact that these are full perform, you know, it's like these are gonna get we're getting all the verses to this song, with her being a teacher. And I get like that's part of her character, but. And obviously, you know, this was the time when musicals were huge, so that's like probably why a lot of people were going to it. So you were gonna, same way, like you'd have an action film focus on the action, that you want to get people to come in with all the musical performances. But those are ones where I just like it doesn't really do much for me on that end.
I don't think it's something that I would like remember afterwards. Yeah. Like, I can't even tell you how the song goes right now.
Yeah.
Like, even though they play it, like, it seems like incessantly throughout the whole film.
Yeah.
It did get an Academy Award nomination for best scoring and best song. And since you brought up the dub aspect of the voice, yeah, Deborah Kerr, who plays the main lead female character here, is dubbed over by Marnie Nixon, which is an interesting story because she also dubs over Deborah Kerr in The King and I. And she also was the vocals for Hepburn and My Fair Lady. Like, she does all the songs in that. She appeared in, she does the songs for one of the characters in West Side Story. Yes. She does some voiceover work in Cinderella, Alice in Wonderland, Mary Poppins, and she's also one of the sisters in The Sound of Music. So, like, she was all over the place. And even in 1998, she appeared as the vocals for Grandmother Fa in Mulan and did some work on the song Honor to Us All. So, like, hats off to Marnie Nixon for appearing in so many different, like, yeah, well-known musicals, even though she didn't get credit for half of them. Another thing I wanted to bring up is, obviously, this is a remake of another film done by the same exact director. And I thought it was interesting that this film, the director made, and it was with, I believe, Irene Dunne, and I'm going to say the wrong person. But he did the film once with a different name, and it was called Love Affair. And then Cary Grant, apparently after he appeared with this director in An Awful Truth, didn't really care for how much improv he kind of did and his style. So he didn't really make any attempts to do anything with that Love Affair movie. But then he kind of came around and wished that he had starred in it. So he eventually convinces the director to redo the film with him as the lead and just call it a different name. And they use the same screenplay written by the same folks. And it's like a shot for shot remake, just with different people, which I don't know, you know, how much that would go over these days, but obviously back then, maybe it was something that you can get away with more frequently. The guy that did the screenplay on it, for just kind of trivia purposes, also did A Philadelphia Story, was one of the two people listed. He didn't get credit because he was blacklisted, but he was one of the screenwriters. So, and then they do this movie, like, you know, again later on in like 19, oh, I'm going to get the wrong year, but they do it later on, like 10 or 20 years later, and they go back to the name of Love Affair on that one. So,
yeah, 1994.
Gotcha. So have you seen either of the other versions?
I have not, no. I have not. So that's interesting. Yeah, the power of Cary Grant, where it's like...
It definitely seems later in his career that he had some sway and he could get like a movie made if he really wanted it to and just insert himself into the starring role. Yeah, so,
I think Tom Cruise.
More power to him.
Like, you know what? I really like that movie with a good boy that was a dog. I want to do that, but I'll be the dog instead of the dog.
Well, we can do this. At least in this one, even though he is still probably slightly older than the person is being played, because I think, what's your guess to like what the character in this movie is supposed to be age-wise?
I would say probably, this is, I'm going to say late 20s, early 30s maybe, if not younger.
Yeah, and Cary Grant's like 57 yeah, in this movie. So like, he definitely is older, but it doesn't like, it's not as jarring. Yeah. As what we saw with, you know, the last
one. No, he still has to try. I did love the one scene at the play where he's just sitting there. And there was like a girl behind him, and it's like, you know, she's like being like just smiling at each other because he's just that charming. So you get why they wanted him to be James Bond, because he certainly like he oozes that the persona. So.
Absolutely. What did you think of some of the? I just wanted to bring up a couple other things. We get couple interactions on the boat with like the cameraman and like some fans, or a guy that like acts like he's friends with Nicky Ferrante even though he's not. And then we also get like the stop on the in the port where Cary Grant and Deborah Kerr go to see Cary Grant's grandmother. And what did you think of some of those interactions on the boat and at the stop with his grandmother?
The stop with his grandmother is, I think, what won me over with the movie. I mentioned it being earnest, and that's like that scene is just like, it is so heartwarming. It is just like this people just There's this, that the actress that played the grandmother is just so ridiculously sweet, and you're like, okay, this is all kind of clicking. And if that scene doesn't work with you, I don't think this movie will. And that's kind of where I bought in. And I did find it interesting at the scene with, you mentioned the film, him taking a femme out. I'm like, that's almost assault. So I mean, I know it's like. But I feel like you hear so many different stories about like famous people and, you know, people like paparazzi and things like that. That's kind of where my, it's not nearly like severe as like punching somebody, but still, like, I could see that, like, it happens today. It's a much bigger deal.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm actually interested to see. You know, I think the grandmother was phenomenal in this. I thought she played, you know, a great role. She's actually in Hitchcock's film Family Plot, 1976, which is like one of the last ones I'm going to watch. So I'm going to be interested to see her show up in that film as well. 20 years older than she is in this film, which she seemed like she was fairly old in this film. So,
100. Interested. Yeah, she seemed like she was in her like 80s or 90s.
Well, she, it says she died in 1982 at the age of 93. So I think she just looked older than she was in this film. Yeah. So, but I'll be interested to see her in Family Plot and see if I can pick her out.
It's like when you realize the actresses in Golden Girls weren't as old as they really were. You know.
Oh my goodness. Yes. It's like what 50 was back when we were growing up and what 50 is now, like Brad Pitt's like. Like, well, that's how things work, I guess, sometimes. So I got some a game I wanted to play with you real quick and put you on the spot. So as I said, Dan knew nothing about this going into this, so that's how kind I am. I like to spring things up on him. So this was listed on the AFI's 100 Years, 100 Passions, and it was listed as number 5. So it wasn't just listed on the list. It was literally top 5. So do you have any guesses as to what 1 through 4 may have been? The four most romantic movies of all time.
From Here to Eternity?
Nope.
Yeah, Roman Holiday?
Roman Holiday is number 4. That was with Audrey Hepburn and Gregory Peck.
Oh, is it all older films? Like, it's like Titanic is
the most recent. No, it's 19. The other three films are 1961, 1939, and 1942.
Okay. Man. All right. I'm surprised. Okay. What else could there be?
I'll give you some. If you need actresses, I can give you actresses.
I'm trying to think. 1940. I don't know.
I feel like one of them you'll kick yourself if you don't get at least one of them. The other two, I
sure think both of ways. What is romantic film back in the 1940s, 1939? Is Cary Grant in any of the other ones at all, or no?
Not in these 5, but I will ask a follow up question about that in a second.
I was trying to think of, there's not like a classic Romeo and Juliet movie that I'm thinking.
Nope.
From Here to Eternity, I mentioned that, I fear to remember. My Fair Lady? Dr. Zhivago?
Nope. Not in the top 5. Some of these did appear in the top 100, but they're not in the top
5. Jeez. Oh, It Happened One Night.
Not in the top 5.
Really? Or are these like any romantic comedies or no?
I would not call these romantic comedies, no.
Okay, and I mentioned.
I would call one a musical, and I would call the other two romantic, like just romantic.
Musical. Movies. West Side Story?
West Side Story is number 3 with Natalie Wood and Richard Beamer from 1961. So the other two are the 39 and the 42 one.
Lady Eve?
Nope.
It's a classic. Oh my God, why can't I think of it? Casablanca.
Casablanca is number 1, 1942 with Ingrid Bergman and Humphrey Bogart. So that leaves number 2, which is 1939.
Gone with the Wind.
Gone with the Wind. Vivian Leigh and Clark Gable. Look at you, you got them all. Okay. All right.
I don't know. I was thinking, like, I kept thinking, I was thinking comedy, and I think that's where I was like, I guess I think Casablanca, and for some reason, I don't think of it as a romantic film, but yeah, it is romantic.
I can get that. So you mentioned Cary Grant. You asked if any of the other top five films were his, and I said no, but I'm curious if you want to throw a dart at a dartboard here. Of the top 100 most romantic films of all time, how many Cary Grant appearances do you think there were?
All right. Out of 100?
Out of the 100 that made the list, how many were Cary Grant films?
So over under, I'll go 6.
Wow. Dan wins the prize. He is exactly in 6.
Really?
So, yes. An Affair to Remember, a Notorious, The Awful Truth, Bringing Up Baby, To Catch a Thief, The Philadelphia Story. I think that's 6. I think I named them all. So, I didn't do the math to figure out who had the most appearances. I was hoping it would just tell me at the end of the list and didn't. So yeah. I don't know. There may be other people that had more appearances, but Cary Grant with 6 is pretty impressive.
What was number one? What was number one?
Number one on the whole list or the highest Cary Grant one?
On the whole list.
The Casablanca was one. So it was Casablanca, then Gone with the Wind, then West Side Story, Roman Holiday, and then An Affair to Remember.
So Affair was his highest.
Yes, that was his highest. And then I think you said a couple of them. You said, did you say The Way We Were?
No.
No, you said Dr. Zhivago, which was number 7. You said My Fair Lady, that was 12. From Here to Eternity, is that the one you said?
Yeah.
That was 20. So there's quite a few good ones. The other ones that were notable, It's a Wonderful Life, Love Story, City Lights, Annie Hall. Then to get like a fairly, like one from our lifetime, you'd have to go to Moonstruck, Ghost, Pretty Woman, On Golden Pond, When Harry Met Sally. Those are some of the newer ones that were on there, at least in the top half.
That's the one they did like in the early 2000s.
Which one?
This list they put it together, you know.
Oh yes. This list was done in 2002.
Okay. I feel like they.
Yep. Oh, it does tell me at the top. I should have looked at the top. I was looking at the bottom to see who had the most. In the top, it tells me Cary Grant and Katharine Hepburn are tied for the most films in this list, 6 each.
Feels fair.
And they co-starred in 2 of them, Bringing Up Baby and The Philadelphia Story, and then Audrey Hepburn was in 5.
I feel like they need to really.
So the Hepburns are all over.
That list is almost 20 years old. I feel like they should. Think about revisiting.
Yeah, because I think you do that again and you get some like, you know, the Before series might be involved in that, and you know, there's been some other ones obviously in the last I think the newest, this was done in 2002, I think the newest film I'm seeing on here is 1996 and 1995.
Oh wow.
So The English Patient from 98 has Shakespeare in Love. So Shakespeare in Love is the most modern film on.
Yeah, I think if you do it. I feel like Shakespeare in Love has kind of come and gone.
Yeah. They got Jerry Maguire in here from 96. That was number 100. There's hardly any other ones from the 90s, really. There's just maybe 5 or so. Sense and Sensibility. But yeah, I feel like they could definitely add some. That's 25 years. For sure.
I know the New York Times did their like 100, top 100 movies of the 2020, like of the 2000s or whatever, but I know AFI is different, so it's only American movies.
Right. And I didn't realize they did this other thing too, where they have like a first round where there's like, somehow they compile like a list of nominations, because there was a bunch of information in one of the trivia things I was looking up where it's like, this was one of the 400 films that was nominated to be on this list of top 100. I was like, oh, I didn't know that there was like a stage before that, there's like a much bigger pool that it gets narrowed down to, and then it gets down to like the 100 or whatever. So I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. So this film got nominated for a bunch of other AFI lists, but it didn't quite make it. I think the song though did get named in like one of their song lists, like the 100 songs or something like that. I don't know that one as well. So last little kind of fun tidbit I found in this one, it was like fairly early in the movie. I think in the beginning, they're kind of showing, they're setting up the fact that there's a very famous like celebrity aspect to Cary Grant character and his fiance. And they do that by like some different newsreels or like radio people and whatnot. And I found it hilarious that like one of the scenes shows this guy who's like literally just sitting at a desk with his feet up, like talking into a microphone. And I'm used to like when they reference radio and things like that of back in this time, like you have the whole setup going,
Yeah.
And I was like, this guy just looks like he's podcasting at his desk. Like, he's just got his feet up and a microphone in front of him. I'm like, this was like the godfather or the grandfather of podcasts right here.
Yeah.
So I thought that was kind of an interesting take these so many years later. I was like, I didn't think they had that ability or capability back then. But any final thoughts for An Affair to Remember, Dan?
No, I do. I'm glad we watched this because it is, like you mentioned, clearly it's considered a classic. And I do think if you like The World is on Fire right now, if you want something that's a bit more simple and just quaint, and I do think this, I don't think kids would enjoy this at all, but if you want, like older adults, I think.
Your parents will.
Like, if you have your parents home for the holidays or whatever, and you want something to watch, I think they'll probably enjoy it. So the kids might like the music, I guess, maybe, I don't know.
But. Yeah, you never know. So we have one more film to cover. We're going to jump into the 1960s. We started with a screwball comedy. We're going to end with a screwball comedy. There's also the word romantic and mystery thrown in for this one. So I don't know what all that is going to entail, but it's Cary Grant, it's Audrey Hepburn and Walter Matthau, James Coburn, George Kennedy. And it also says spans three different genres, suspense, thriller, romance, and comedy. So it feels like it's the perfect ending to a Cary Grant retrospective. Yeah. We're going to get thrilling comedy, romance, and that seems to cover everything. So any experience with Charade, Dan?
No, I except that it keeps being recommended to me every time because we've been watching Cary Grant and it's not a Hitchcock film, but it's very it looks like a Hitchcock movie. So yeah, it's just been recommended to me for like every time on any, because it's on a bunch of apps, so it's always like recommended for you, so I'm glad to finally be able to watch it. I mean, I could have watched it before, but you know what I mean. So looking forward to it.
Right. This has definitely been on a list of films for me to watch for a long time, so I'm going to be happy to kind of cross that off, but I'm going to go in as blind as I can besides what I just read to you. That's all I know about the film. So Dan, why don't you let everybody know how they can get in touch with you or find you on the interwebs?
I'll just search Comic Concierge on most social media platforms and you'll find me.
Yeah, and you can search me out at Optimus Solo, or you can search us out if you search The Cinema Geeks or The Cinema Geekcast, and then you can find our website where everything is hosted at geekcastradio.com. So that does it for this episode. We hope you tune in next time for another chance to listen to more of The Cinema Geeks.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.